Hey folks, welcome to the Brief Encounter podcast with me, Johnny Boyle. This week I'm going to pick up from the conversation I was having with Irish actor Jim Bartley. This is part two of a two-part interview. We pick up where Jim began in TV in the 60s and moved into film and the show bands, and Jim shares a few anecdotal disasters along the way and reminisces about friends such as David Kelly, Brenda Fricker and Dennis Waterman. Jim is arguably one of the longest serving actors, entertainers in RTE, if not the longest. He's been acting there since 1963. What I really like about the second part of this interview is I think maybe it's the pints of porter coursing through our veins, but it was just an absolute joy to talk to Jim. And this was, in fact, my very first podcast that I conducted. Other topics that we touch on is we touch on the difficulties of being an artist in the 80s. It was a very difficult time for families growing up during the recession. And at one point, I scooch off to the toilets. And what I've just realised whilst editing this is Jim left me some feedback, which I wasn't aware of, which I just heard, which is great fun. And to end this podcast, Jim also delivers a beautiful soliloquy at the end about Dublin in the rare old times. Jim is 74 now, and I suppose with everything that's going on in the world right now, our thoughts are with a lot of old people and the care we need to take to mind them during this virus outbreak. So folks, look after your parents, your grandparents and everybody. Be safe. Talk to you soon. Bye. Okay. But Brenda Fricker was in that as well.
Brenda played my girlfriend in it.
Yeah,
she's lovely. Yeah, she's great. Yeah. And I haven't seen her for years.
Oh, really? Yeah. Mm. But but off the back of that, you formed a show band. Did you form the show band?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Or did somebody approach you?
No, I didn't.
You?
Somebody else had a show band. They're from Galway.
It was your character.
I asked RTE, could I use the name of
Sean
the character?
Sean Nolan and the Raindrops.
Yeah, but I asked... RT, I had to get permission to use Sean Nolan.
Yeah.
And that, but a friend, Paddy Brennan, who was the son of the family who owned Brennan's Hotel, you know, in Leeson Park.
Leeson Park, Brennan's Hotel.
Yeah.
That's
a long time ago.
There?
And I don't know if it's still there. Paddy, he was manager of a show band down in Galway. And he asked me what and he didn't know if I could sing or not, you know. No, I did. I didn't know that I couldn't sing either. So I went and I met the lads and did all that. And we agreed on the whole lot, right? And I remember, right, I rehearsed and all that, a few numbers. My first number was Elvis Presley's Such a Night, right?
Yeah.
And it was down in the Lakelands, right, in Mullingar, right? And I came, this is one of the disasters, right?
Right, okay.
This is right. And I went out, and they were around the stage when I went out to make my appearance. They were one deep. one deep at the stage. And there was a girl there, and I went, and I missed the timing in one of those. It was a night, you know?
Yeah.
And I missed him, right? And I was way ahead of the band, right? And this very pretty girl is in her arms on the stage in front of me, right, looking up at me and just shaking her head from side to side.
She's not buying it.
She later became a sort of girlfriend later, you know?
Right, okay.
Yeah, I won't mention her name in case she... I don't know whether you never know. You see, you don't know if they're still alive.
Sure.
They're listening, and but anyway, if she's listening, then she goes, she'll know.
And were you going out with a big band? Would you have a brass section or?
It had saxophone, it had trumpet, it had bass guitar, rhythm guitar, lead guitar, drummer, and myself.
Right.
Yeah, it was 7-piece.
And I mean, back in the day, I mean, you're going all over the country.
Oh, yeah. We eventually got, what do you call it? What's the band you used earlier in the night?
The relief band
or whatever.
Oh, okay. Like a support band or like a...
The one that starts the night and then you come on.
Yeah, the opening act, yeah. So yeah, there'll be a few acts on.
There was a name for it, right? And we were able to get a new van, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't great. I hadn't actually prepared well enough because I knew Brendan Boyer and I knew...
The Huckle Book.
Yeah, I knew Brendan. Yeah, Brendan became... I was at Brendan's wedding.
Yeah.
Right. Ah, yeah, Brendan, lovely man. But I got to know a lot of people. And I did a pantomime for television with the Dixies.
Right.
With Brendan O'Brien, who became a very good friend, and Joe Mack.
Yeah.
Very funny. I did a panto with Joe Mack, Robin Hood. Or no, not Robin Hood, Red Riding Hood.
Right.
And I couldn't stop laughing at Joe. He was so funny.
Yeah.
He's so funny. And there was a scene I had to do and I had to turn and it was you. And I slap him across the face and he goes, and I can't laugh. And the director, I can't, every time I do it, we break up. He says, what? It's not me. You know, the director's running out because I'm corpsing every time.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. I met him a few times and I knew Brendan. I used to go down and meet Brendan, go out. I used to do a gig or any some sort of function that Brendan would be running, and I'd appear just to sing a song like a Jim Reeves song, you know,
yeah.
Put your sweet lips a little closer to the phone, and all that, you know. I enjoyed meeting the lads. I met an awful lot of lads, right, you know, in the show band and the lot. And I met Joe Dolan.
Yeah.
I met Joe. Joe was lovely. He was great, you know.
Yeah.
He was so easy, Joe, you know.
Yeah.
He was great, you know.
Yeah.
You know?
Amazing talent. Amazing singer. Yeah. Amazing showman.
Oh, he was great. He was. Yeah. I should have watched him, you know, as to what he was doing. Now, I wouldn't have had the voice, but at least I would have had a couple of the sort of what
Still
he does,
moves.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because in a musical or a stage musical, you're not yourself. You're playing a character.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And all that.
So,
at least we utter to the other disaster.
Oh yeah, good.
Frank Sinatra. It's Frank Sinatra. Is there somebody behind me?
No, right. Somebody's grand, your biggest fan. It might be that woman from that gig you were talking about. She's come back to haunt you.
No, the first one was Paddy Cole.
Yeah.
Down in the Hudson Bay Hotel in Athlone.
Okay.
And they asked me to do a vocal on it, right? And I picked Mac the Knife, you know?
Yeah.
I did the rehearsal, right, with Paddy and the band and all right. And it was great. The rehearsal was great, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Came up to recording, and you know the last section where it goes up, you know.
Does it take key change?
That's right. Oh, Mackie's back in town, you know.
Yeah.
And on the recording, I blew it, you know.
Yeah.
And then the first assistant came in and said, would you, I told them that, look, You can stay overnight and do it again in the morning. I said, yeah, do it. But I told him, I said, you're an actor, you're not a singer, you know. I mean, that'll be all right, you know.
Yeah.
And I said, are you sure? And I said, yeah. And so I knew it wasn't good, you know. And anyway, he went, oh, yeah, that's okay. You can go home in the morning, right? So I went over to see Paddy, and he got up and walked away, and he wouldn't talk to me.
He wouldn't talk to you.
No, I don't know whether he just didn't see me, or did he not want to see me. But I mean, I haven't spoken to Paddy ever since. So I have to say, Paddy, if you're ever listening to this, I really have to apologise.
You're still gigging.
And the rehearsal, brilliant.
Yeah.
I was so happy, you know.
Yeah.
And anyway, I blew it, and the same thing happened with the Late Late Show. 6 years ago.
What?
I was celebrating my 30 years or 19. What is it? Many years? 63. 63. I was 63 when I started in. So it was 50 years.
Right.
Yeah.
50 years working for RTE.
Yeah, 50 years. Yeah, since. Talk to Rose started.
Yeah.
So I went on and they gave me nearly half the Late Late Show.
Right.
And
okay.
And so they asked me what would I sing at the end. I said, yeah, I'd love to do I've got you under my skin.
Yeah.
I've got you deep in the... And it was great. And I sang that before with the Late Late Band at a wedding.
Yeah.
Of one of the cast in Fair City. Yes. Sarah McDowell. And it was great. And Dermot from... as they call them, the late, late pan, but there's another, they have another name. Is it cheese or something? I don't
know. Camembert Quartet.
The Camembert Quartet. Dave was right. And he says, yeah, Jim, very professional. Great. That was down at the wedding. So I said, okay, when I came up to do the interview on the late, late, I said, yeah, okay. And they sent me,
Does it hit me, Michael? You give us two little scoops there of yourself, Jim. Thanks, Tony. This guy was Tony. It was Tony.
Tony. Yeah. I said, okay, we do. I got you under my skin, and they sent me a recording with Frank on it, right?
Yeah.
And it was just a key too high.
Okay.
But I said, I can reach that.
Yeah.
I can reach that, you know?
Yeah.
I should never do that. No, just send it back and say, no, it's just
change the key. Yeah,
change the key just down. Because this was the Dublin, it wasn't the band, it wasn't the Camembert. This is a Dublin big band.
Okay.
You know, I mean, this was...
Yeah,
you
know, like the Hot House Band or one of those.
The only thing short of it was, in Nelson Riddle, was the fiddles, you know, the violins.
Yeah.
And the big lights, they do a big band night, Glenn Miller stuff. And so I said, yeah, I can make that. So, and I had the time and everything, right, you know. And Don Baker I invited on to do with me,
right,
to
okay.
do middle section. Right?
Did he play a bit of harp, did he,
on the
harmonica? Yeah.
Because I'd worked with Don. I never worked with him, but he was in Fair City at the time.
That's
so he came out, and we did the rehearsal the afternoon, had a few run-throughs, right? And yeah, had it up there, great, you know, thanks, lads, okay. Don says, hey, Jim, man. Your timing's brilliant, it's great, because I'm listening to Frank and his time and all that, right, you know. And I sort of said to him, yeah, pity about the singing, isn't it? I said, no, he says, right. So anyway, and then the show came up.
Yeah.
And I was, the initial stages of peripheral neuropathy setting into the legs.
Right.
So I couldn't walk down the stairs as a guest when Ryan says Jim Bartley, right?
Yeah.
I had to go on and sit in the couch, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't know I was going to do that, because nobody told them that he's bad on his legs, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I went in, and I remember sitting down there. I had to go around and come in, and and I sit down. Then he introduced me. Then we're going through the night, and the legs are getting worse.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, go on, nice gym and everything, and then some of the cast were in and the whole lot. And not the funny thing about the cast being in, you know, where they say, I remember Jim doing this, you know, and you know, yeah. And he did that. And they hadn't a word to say. Tony Tormey's the only one. He says, yeah, I remember Jim coming in because he was brought in to give the show a kick in the arse, and Jesus, he did that, you know. That was the only thing. And then Ciara Callan says, I remember Jim, yeah. I remember the first time, right? And he held my hand while I had to sing beside the grave. Right, and I said, the last Rose of Summer, yeah. And then the others, yeah. I knew more about them, I could have said about them.
Yeah,
anything. So I said, this fucking thing is dying. And pardon me, French. But I said, oh my God. Anyway, it came up to the end, and I made some stupid remarks. You know, when you're doing something like that, you don't know how stupid you're going to be.
Yeah, yeah.
Really,
yeah.
I didn't have a drink all day.
Yeah.
I should have.
Yeah, it would have relaxed you.
I should have had just two vodkas or two Irish coffees or something before. But I didn't. I was so professional and sober at everything. But the legs were... And when I got up off the sofa to walk over to the band, I couldn't walk.
Yeah.
And he's talking to the camera, and they've obviously switched to a close-up of him. And I'm trying to wave over to the stage manager, you got to help me, right? And then I got over to the edge of the stage, and then they saw, I got down to the thing. I know, of course, I'm panicking at this stage.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, the legs are going, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be able to stand up, right? Eventually a stool arrives over behind me, and then we go into it, right? I start off okay, but then it gets to the second verse, and I miss it. I went into the middle eight. I went into the...
Right.
You know, I got you, wonder. I got you deep in the heart. And I tried so not to give in. I missed that. And I went into, well, anything that I might do, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
I went in, and then, no, they weren't. I was wrong. I was gone ahead of them.
Oh, God.
And they were still on their
thing.
And I just said, I said to them, I said, I said, I'm all over the place here, right? And I could see all my friends over in the audience, right? And their heads are all turned away, saying, oh, Jesus, this is a terrible... I'm there, and I'm dying, and everything. And then when I get back into it, because Eddie, our floor manager, who's a musician, he was in rehearsals on the Monday, he says, I got back into it. After the section, the middle section, I got back into it.
Yeah.
But I was down to my key, and they were up in the original key. And I finished, and that was... I tell you one thing, if you're going to blow it in front of 650,000 people.
You might as well go big. Just go big.
That was... There were the two disasters, apart from the set falling down on top of me in the Atlanta Theatre.
What play was that?
A Singular Man, J.P. Dunleavy. I was too young for it.
The Ginger Man.
He wrote the Ginger Man. I got the part because at the age, I sort of looked like him. I wasn't as old as him.
Yeah.
I just had that thin face, and you know. And of course, the set was designed in such a way that they could just lift off flats.
Sure, right? Sure.
And they're into the next scene.
Yeah.
Right, you know?
Yeah.
But they forgot to lift off one of the flats coming into my scene.
Yeah.
And I'm in the bed, right? And the girl who's trying to get in, right, can't open the door. But she tries to get in the window. And now this flat, or this room, or hotel, the room is four stories up. She's trying to get in the window, you know.
Yeah.
And next, she brings in the whole flat, the whole stage.
The whole thing of
the whole set on the side came right down on top of me in the bed. And my God, I couldn't think of anything to say. Just, two-star hotel, look what you get. And it was, oh yeah, that was it, right? Yeah,
that's why. Tell me, your daughter Eve is an actress, and she's a teacher. Is she teach acting?
Teaching down where she was, and now she's just had her little son,
right.
Luca.
That's your first grandson?
Well, we lost the first one.
Right.
We lost the first one.
Sorry to hear that.
Young Rua. He was stillborn. The heart stopped on the morning he was to arrive.
Oh,
young Rua, and she'd been, like I said, she lost her brother, you know, when she was only 8 years of age. She lost her brother Emmett, who was a year older than her, and then she loses her own.
Yeah.
Her own firstborn, right? And getting through that, she's very resilient, and herself and Gus, you know, they're so good.
Yeah.
But that's now he's coming on fine, yeah.
And did you have any influence on her becoming an actress, or was it just her own decision?
It happens in theatre families, you know.
Yeah.
Like it happens in the Brennan family, Dennis Brennan, Daphne Carroll, all the
Cusacks. Look at the Cusacks, the Cyril
like
and
the Cusacks,
and all them. And
but Eva, then she during the lean times, if you're not working, she went teaching, right?
Yeah.
And she was teaching pretty much, and like all actors, waiting for the phone to ring.
Yeah.
Waiting for she does TV ads, she does TV parts and that. But she's very busy actually bringing up this young fella, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And Gus is a great husband. He's a lovely actor. He doesn't get the breaks he deserves. Gus McDonough. Yeah. Great. Yeah.
It's just it's all down to luck, isn't it?
That's all.
Whether it's acting or music or, you know. What's it? You told me this before, I have to ask you. The five stages of acting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Who's Jim Bartley? Get me Jim Bartley. Get somebody like Jim Bartley. Who's Jim Bartley?
Full circle.
Yeah.
Full circle.
Who's Jim Bartley? Get me Jim Bartley. Oh, no, the other one I missed out was get me somebody who looks like Jim Bartley.
Yeah.
Or get somebody like Jim Bartley.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the last one is who's Jim Bartley?
Who's Jim Bartley?
And that's it, yeah.
How do you find, I mean, any artistic endeavor is always, does, you know, for me, even being a musician, it's when it's good, it's great. And when it's terrible, it's really terrible. You know, in terms of working, you know, I mean, it's when you're flush, and then you go through the quiet periods where
I've been there, yeah. I mean, the 80s were the most horrible decade of my life.
Yeah.
Because a recession in the 80s as well.
Yeah.
The marriage to Barbara broke up in the 80s. Young Emmett died in the 80s. The ESB wanted to come out and cut off me ESB in the 80s. And I'm bringing up two kids on £45 a week on the dole in the 80s. Now, there's a decade, right?
Yeah.
That you you look back on, you say, look, I'm here again, I'm back. I remember I went through a terrible time after young Emmett died.
Of course, yeah.
And I was drinking. I was drinking.
Yeah.
A while after that. Not being thrown out of places or not being obstreperous or not, but just drinking too much.
Numbing yourself.
Just numbing, you're drinking, right? And not that I bothered, I didn't bother anybody, but there was no phone call, there was no acting, there was nothing coming in. And a friend of mine said, you have to get you off your arse, will you do head waiter for me?
Yeah.
In a restaurant in town. And he said, come on, most head waiters are actors, right?
Yeah.
So we get an actor to be a head waiter, you know?
Yeah.
So I went in, Colm, you know, Pat, and they had a little restaurant in town called Minsky's.
Where was that now?
It was in Ely Place.
Right, Ely Place.
It's in Ely Place, but it used to be a nightclub at night, but he wanted to use it as a restaurant. So it got me out of my doldrums, so to speak, got me up with a purpose.
Yeah.
Went in and did the sort of, I used to do the blackboard outside, write the blackboard up and put it outside and go around the corner, get the girls to print the menu for me. And I was dressed in the tux and the black bow tie and everything. And I used to sort of do a Basil Fawlty on it, right?
Yeah.
Just to get some of the pressure off me, right? I said, you're not going to ask for steak, are you? Oh, for God's sake, don't do it. You know, you don't know what he's like. And he doesn't know what to do with a steak. And I did all of that, you know.
Yeah.
Then it was good. But then the landlord hadn't paid for things, right?
Yeah.
And he was renting from the landlord. And there are people coming in and taking the blinds down off the windows, right, in the middle of lunchtime. And I'm saying, oh, yeah, this is not going too well.
Yeah.
But, no, he was, he didn't, he was in trouble, the landlord.
Yeah.
And so the restaurant had to go.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I used to, if there was no beer license, are there, but I used to manage to get them beer because the back lane from the restaurant went in the back door.
Of Donahue's, was it?
Of Donahue's. Right? So I used to come in the gym, they started having the tray, and they put the beer on the tray, and I come back in again. So that was, I'm ever grateful for them for getting me out of it. And I remember getting back on stage was hard. I remember I played Hatchet, I played the lead in Hatchet, I played Hatchet himself.
Yeah.
Up in the embankment in Tala, right?
Right,
it's a great success, and I love the part. And but I ended up playing the barman in Hatchet.
Yeah,
in the Olympia, and it was like sort of speaking extra, or you know what I mean? No, and I said, yeah. And I said, now here you go. You have to think about this, Jim. What are you going to do? And then they were going to do the Toad of Toad Hall, The Adventures of Mr. Toad in the Olympia. And there was Jerry Sinnott, who's, I think he's gone.
Jerry Sinnott. He ran the Olympia. He ran
the Olympia. I don't know if he owned it, but he ran it.
I'm friends with his daughter, Tara Sinnott.
Yeah, but he was great. And I went to him, they were casting Toad, The Adventures of Mr. Toad, and the King Weasel, right? And he has a big Elvis Presley number in the show, right? And he's really nasty, you know. And if anything, I was born to play nasty, right? I really was, you know. I mean, Hatchet wasn't nasty, but he could do you, you know. Yeah. He didn't think about it. And I remember starting the school plays, I played Judas, you know. You can't go nastier than that, you know. and in Taffin, right?
Yeah.
And as I tried to strangle Pierce Brosnan, right? Till the bastard shot me, right?
Right.
Chicken. You know? Anyway. And I went in to see Jerry And he said, Jim, yeah, well, we're looking. And he said, I don't know anyway. So as I was going out of the office, I just turned around. I did an Elvis at the door, right? And I said, Jerry, I can tell by what you're drinking that you're really kind of cool. Oh, yeah. And then and he goes, okay. Yeah. I got it. And then I got rave reviews. Great,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And was that a big turnaround for you? That was the comeback.
That was the comeback.
So yeah. we're talking what, the late 80s? Early 90s?
God, yeah. I remember. Yeah. I was early 90s.
Yeah.
Because Eva, my daughter, was in. And she was up in the stage box, right beside her, right?
Yeah.
And then, I'm having a fencing, right, with the wooden swords with Alan Stanford as Mr. Toad.
Alan Stanford.
And I'm King Weasel. Yeah, and go right, and there's fencing. And actually, here from the girls, you're going, come on, Mr. Toad, come on, Mr. Toad. I said, excuse me, Mr. Toad, just a minute. Excuse me, Eva Bartley, are you cheering for him? Yeah, wait till I get you home. Okay, Mr. Toad, yeah.
And you stopped it. Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. Jeepers.
Yeah, so that was the start. That was, really feel the life coming back. And then, of course, then I got the call from Niall Matthews to do Fair City.
Yeah.
Which was 1989, right? So, yeah.
What's it like living with a character for 30 years? You know.
Well, you're not living with him. You know, you're living with the public love. They used to love Bella, you know.
Yeah.
Even now I hear my mum loves you. Now I hear my granny loves you. No, that was, I remember getting the phone call from my agent, Maureen. She says, Niall Matthews has been on. He was a producer. And he wants to know, would you be considered going into Fair City? And this was 1990, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like summer, June, July 1990. And I said, I'd go out and see him. I meant to see Niall. I like Niall. And I talked to him and we talked through it. And I said, yeah. And he said, see, if you don't like the name of the character, right? Now we can, I said, what is his name, right? He says, Bella Doyle. I said, I play it.
Yeah.
I said, you like it? You won't get a better name than that.
Yeah.
After a few months, he said, hey, Bella, hey, where'd you get that name from? You know, hey, Bella, you know, no problem.
Yeah.
And that's the way it happened, I knew.
Yeah.
And I'd be walking along the street, hey, Bella, you know, and all that. I know the public took to it.
Yeah.
Great. And I said, I was never so grateful for a character's name.
Yeah.
Bella Doyle, right? And it was great. And doing that character for years, he was every man. He went through all the problems. He went through losing children in the series, right?
Yeah.
He lost his eldest child through a motor accident. He lost a child called Alice, who he had by one of his affairs.
Yeah.
But he couldn't grieve.
Yeah.
Because he didn't want it to come out.
Sure.
And then eventually when it comes out, she throws him out of the house. But he went through all that. Then he went through the prostate cancer, which he survived. And he went through all the things that, you know.
Yeah.
Which he used to go through then. And it's not so much happening now because people want to be entertained more than lectured to or educated.
Sure,
you know?
sure.
But in those days, yeah. Went through all that.
Well, I remember in the 90s, particularly, like, you know, some of your story arcs were like, they were making headlines. You know, it was the talk of the town, let's say. You know, people were reading it in the newspaper and it's kind of, what is he going to do next? Particularly, it was the affair. I think you had an affair at one point, didn't you?
And
you had a few of them.
Yeah. No, I've only got two hands. I've only got 10 fingers. I can't count. Yeah. You had a few affairs, right? And they were lovely. I mean, we didn't have the affair, but they were lovely actresses. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's the thing about it. I mean, they the same thing every week. No, it's not the same thing every week. You have different script every week.
Yeah.
You have different scenes every week, and then you have different challenges every week to make. You got the script, and you got to lift that script, the words off the page.
Sure.
You don't leave them there. The phrasing, the timing and everything, see what the author is planning and that. And you've got to put your own, put the character into it, but your own experience of knowing how to make it come off the page,
sure,
you know?
Sure. And, I mean, in terms of, I mean, you've, your career now has spanned like 7 decades, which is, but, and I think to be a musician or an actor or whatever it is, to have a career for that long, I mean, it's a huge achievement, you know, to get through. But you take the rough with the smooth, I suppose. Is there anything you'd say to your younger self?
What was it? The big issue is you asked me what I write to myself, right? And I couldn't, because I'm going to have to get in touch with it. This is over a year ago, well over 2 years ago nearly. Well, I write to myself. I did the series where you write to your young self.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at people and all they're doing is talking about themselves.
Yeah.
Now, you know.
Yeah.
And their history. They're not actually saying, look, when you meet a bollocks like, you know, so-and-so, so-and-so, you know, don't be as aggressive, right, yeah, as I was.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just learn to keep your
cool.
Yeah, you have to be talking to your younger self. You just can't be writing about yourself.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
And if you're playing a match, right, keep an eye on the fellow who's taking the penalty. Keep an eye on one of his shoulders, right? If he drops his right shoulder, he's going to hit it with his left.
You want to talk to things
like that. But if you start talking, and you, then you're only talking about yourself.
Yeah.
You know.
Is there anything you would have loved to have done? I mean, in terms of a role, was there a particular role you would have loved to have played? Or was there something, or was maybe there was an opportunity that might have...
I would have. But there are two roles. There'd be Captain Boyle.
Yeah. Love that
and
play.
Jocks, right?
Yeah.
You know, I just think, I'm too old now for Captain Boyle, but Captain Boyle was a much younger man than, you know?
Yeah.
Peter O'Toole is playing him like he's 60, you know?
Yeah.
And they're playing him like he's... I mean, the daughter, right, is only about 19.
Yeah.
Right? And Johnny is only 16.
That's
he's
right.
A young fella.
He's got the arm... The
so they... And in those days, they got married when they were about 22,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, the youngest, Mary Boyle, she's only about 19, so he would have been only sort of 41.
Yeah.
Maybe 41.
Yeah.
Not 65.
Yeah.
No, but that's great, you know?
Yeah.
And his mate, Joxer, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they could have got married when they were 18.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which made them 37.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing that they tend to cast, right? Thinking, he's an old man. He's not an old man, you know?
Yeah.
He's a young fella.
Yeah.
You know? And he's making excuses not to go to work. Got the pains in the legs, you know?
Yeah.
You
know, the pains in me legs,
you know?
What is the stars?
You're all right. You're all right hopping into Foley's snug the other day. You're right. You know? And they, you know, I just... And he's at the age where he says, what is the prana? You know, and he's doing all this. I always think, don't cast him so old.
So old.
It's funnier when he doesn't have a great experience, you know,
yeah,
of the world.
Yeah.
He's grown up in this tenement. He's grown up there. Jax is his little mate, you know.
Yeah.
You know, sleight of hand and no problem, Captain, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bottle's still gone, Captain. Ah, terrible. Makes countless millions more. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, there are, you know... They're lovely parts. And I remember when, be careful when I say this, Amadeus, right?
Yeah.
Wolfgang Amadeus, right, which is about Mozart, right?
That's right.
And Mozart was a pint drinking, pool playing, snooker playing, pub, right?
Yeah.
Lounge bar.
Wild.
But a genius, right? Well, because they said, it's a Mozart, it's a classical play, the classical part. So they got a classical actor, right, to play it, right?
In the movie, was it?
No, in the play.
Oh, in the play.
In the play. I said, what are you doing? This fella is, right? And the one, the actor they got was, yeah, he was grand. He's a fine actor in a different part. He wasn't a... Like I say, he wouldn't have had to. I would have loved to have played that, you know.
Yeah.
I would have lived to have played, right? You know, with a history of darts and snooker and point drinking in Temple Bar. Yeah, there's your man, you know. He's Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Get up here, play the piano.
Yeah. Well, Tom Hulce played him in the movie which Milos Forman made, who made Wolf Love the Cuckoo's Nest. I thought it was great. Won a load of Oscars. It was great, you know. A role you would have liked to have played then. That's a role you would have loved to have...
That's a role I would have loved to play. But I played... I love playing Johnny Boyle.
Yeah.
Right? I said, yeah.
Coincidentally.
Which is my name. I gave that arm for Ireland. Right? As a young actor, I went to him, he says, I gave that arm for Ireland. And he raises his arm. I loved it. But watching Peter O'Toole and Jack McGowan playing... they were great. But I just sort of said that he was too old.
That happened to Kirk Douglas. He was in the original play of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Billy Bibbit, the guy with the stutter, because Jack Nicholson went on to play it in the movie. Yeah. But in the play, it was Kirk Douglas, and the stuttering Billy Bibbit was played by Gene Wilder. Do you remember Gene Wilder from Young Frankenstein? Mm. Mm. And what happened was Kirk Douglas, he gave the script, he bought the rights to Cuckoo's Nest, and he gave it to Michael Douglas as a 21st birthday present. But when they went to make the movie, Michael Douglas, because he had the intention of playing McMurphy in the film, and Michael Douglas went, Dad, you're too old.
Yeah.
And I gave the part to Jack Nicholson, and I tell you, he wasn't happy about it at all.
No. I mean, you've got to, like I said, a singular man, JP, I was too young.
Yeah.
I was too young, and another little story about that one, which is quite revolting, because it was a no-budget production, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only stage manager, no ASM, there's no laundry, there was no, you know.
Yeah.
And I had to wear one of these old Long John things, you know, like the cowboys wear of one piece, right?
Yeah.
And I got a stage where there was nobody to take it and clean it or anything, right? And it's not my, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, the stench would be all off it, right? You know. Terrible. And the same actress who was trying to climb in the window, right? And one night I got into the bed and she wanted to give me the message, right? Oh, God. And it's so hot and it's so sweaty and smelly. I just remember saying that and I said, I don't blame her at all. Because I'm so conscious now, right?
Yeah.
Whenever I'm working, I mean, the shower and everything, the whole lot. And especially when we are beside somebody who has, you know, a severe case of...
Oh, yeah.
No odorono, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I've
had to spend months on tour buses with people, and I tell you.
I've been in a taxi with drivers and, God almighty, you know. You just want to get out. Excuse me here, here's a fiver, can you let me out?
Which
is sort of, can I open the window, please? You know. On the window, right. I mean, I remember, right, you were hoping that the Liffey still smelt, you know?
Yeah.
If the smell from Liffey would do away with it, you know, or just draft it in or keeps the knackers or something, you know? Get a better smell than that, you know? At least I know that's a natural from the Liffey, right?
Yeah.
And keeps the knackers is right. But I know a human one is natural, but it's just a sort of unclean, isn't it? Yeah. What you'd say, right? Or lack of attention to, you know?
Well, can I ask you, before I finish up... Right.
Are you finishing?
Well, we're an hour and a half. Well, I've got to go to the loo at some point. We're an hour and a half. We were talking about... Well, there's a couple of people I want to just talk... Because there's a lot of actors and people you've worked with over the years that are with us no more.
Yeah.
You know, people such as David Kelly.
Yeah, I think I did the last interview, like you were doing with me. I think I did his last radio interview.
Really?
Yeah, because I was doing people like... Laurie Martin, Dave Kelly, Mick Lally, right?
Yeah.
And doing them. This was a few years ago. And Dave, well, I've known Dave for years, ever since Talca Row, since I was 18, you know?
Yeah.
And his children and Laurie, right? Laurie Martin. Yeah, he was great. But the ever so dapper Dave Kelly.
Yeah.
And a lovely timing, a lovely graceful actor, you know, lovely. I mean, speech wise, yeah. And he'd throw away lines, which are so funny, right?
Yeah.
He didn't have to labour them at all, you know?
Yeah.
And of course, in Strumpet City.
Rashers.
Rashers in
Tierney.
Strumpet City, Rashers. And himself and Brendan Caldwell.
Oh, they were fabulous.
It was a lovely two
fabulous.
Of them were great.
There's kind of a touch of Waiting for Godot off the two of them.
Ah, they were great, you know. And magic. And you're looking at that. He taught me how to forge. He taught me how to forge a check, forge a signature, yeah. He did, yeah, he showed me one day. I don't know if I tell anybody, right? Upside down and backwards.
Upside down and backwards?
And then backwards, the name, yeah. I could take yours, and I could take your signature. Right?
Because you could copy
and
it?
And I just do two attempts at it, and then I'd do the real one. And I'd put it beside yours, and you wouldn't know.
Wouldn't know the difference.
You wouldn't know the difference. Because you think, yeah, I signed that with a few points.
And that was David Kelly's thing.
David
wasn't
Kelly was able to do that.
He probably forged a few checks and a few builders back in the day.
He was a grand man.
You know, he'll always be fondly remembered as well as Mr. O'Reilly and Fawlty Towers, the builder, dodgy builder.
Yeah, who built that wall? The wall, yeah.
If the good Lord says.
I know. And what was it? Ned, Chasing Ned.
Waking Ned, where the lotto movie.
Yeah, he was great, yeah.
I love that line of Fawlty Towers where he keeps saying, if the good Lord, as Basil Fawlty says, is mentioned one more time, I shall move you closer to him.
That was Dave. A few others, you know. Just.
Yeah, because you did Ulysses, didn't you? Mm. Was that with David, Milo O'Shea and Finn.
Every actor in Dublin was in Ulysses.
Yeah.
And that was a great one. I played a private, two privates in the army going through Monto, right?
Yeah.
Down through the brothel district. And himself, Milo, and playing Leopold, and Stephen Dallas, played by Maurice Reeves, which I hated, a Scottish actor getting an Irish part. I really hated that, you know. But anyway, and they're in Monto.
Yeah.
And this is a night time. And we're filming off in Sackville Place, just off O'Connor Street, right? Around the corner from the Gresham, right?
Yeah.
And the tenements were there at the time, right?
Yeah.
And Colin Borden and myself were playing two soldiers out, right, looking for their bit. And as we're going along, and the crowd are outside hanging out of their windows, right?
Yeah.
Hanging out of the windows. And then they see me coming out, and I just say, Now, Sean Nolan was gone at the time, right? Tackle row. Sean, how are you doing? How are you, Sean? I said, yeah, thanks. Then the dialogue comes up, and Bloom and Dedalus are trying to chat up Rosalind Linehan, right? Awesome. And myself and Colin Board come around, right? Hey, you. Were you trying to chat up my board while I was having a piss? And the crowd go, Go on, Sean, tell him. And Colin Board says, come on, Hardy, give him a kick in the knackers. And the crowd erupt again. I said, for God's sake, right? And I said, and the first assistant comes up and he says, Jim, can you do something, right? I said, lads, how are you, Sean? How are you doing? Can you do us a favour? We've only got a half an hour to get this right. And if you could just not cheer or anything, you know?
Yeah.
And no problem, Sean. No problem. Yeah, for you, no problem.
Yeah.
So we had to do it and silence. Yeah. It was great. That was the scene I did with Milo.
Milo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. What? He had a great career in America, didn't he, as well? I mean, he's...
Yeah. Oh, he had a huge one.
Yeah, he did.
You could see him in sort of features like series and half hour sitcoms, you know.
I'm trying. Who was the? He wasn't in Derby O'Gill and The Little People, now, was he? Mm. Was that Milo O'Shea? No,
that was Jimmy O'Dea.
It was Jimmy O'Dea. Jimmy O'Dea. Because you did a Disney movie with Kurt Russell. You were telling me before.
Guns in the Heather.
Because that's where he started out, didn't he? He started out in Disney.
Kurt
movies.
Russell. He was over here.
Guns in the Heather. Because we were talking earlier about that movie Tombstone. Did he play Wyatt Earp in Tombstone?
He played Wyatt Earp, yeah.
And I was actually only reading about it recently, and he pretty much kind of directed that movie himself. I think they fired the director in the first week, and he was very much the man behind
it. But he had a lot of experience at that stage, Kurt, right? Yeah. And he's a good fine actor, you know? And he has a good fine wife as well.
He certainly does, Goldie.
Yeah.
So in terms of actors, who would be, I know it's a bit of a cheesy question, but who would be your favourite actors of all time?
Of all time, mate. Well, you see, you've got different Irish actors and that, and I don't know. I think Ray McAnally was a fine actor, right? Yeah. Absolutely. You know, and he had a great presence. I remember seeing him when I was going to school with the pantomimes in Irish in the Abbey, you know,
yeah.
or in the Queen's
yeah.
at the time, himself and T.P. McKenna. Well, Ray was a fine actor, right? Internationally, I have to say that Robert De Niro, to me, is a great screen actor.
Yeah, yeah.
And Al Pacino,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And Dustin Hoffman. And you've got ladies, you know. Oh, it's probably a pure sort of misogynistic sort of put. I love the vulnerable sort of ones like Melanie Griffiths and the Meg Ryans. But Siobhan McKenna was, right, to me, and I worked with Siobhan. She was in that Juno and the Peacock.
Yeah.
And she was great. She came out to see my first production of The Long and the Short of It.
Yeah.
Out in the Embankment, right? And I remember about that. Can I tell you about that?
Yeah, of course you can.
Yeah, we're on our way, stage manager Johnny, we're going out and have the set on top of the car, a Renault 18, right? And the props are in the boot and furniture in the back seat, right? And we're on the way up to do the first night up in the Embankment, right? And I see a plume of smoke in the distance as we're approaching Jonestown, way beyond Jonestown, back plume of smoke. And Ty turns around to me and says, I bet you're hoping that's the Embankment. Anyway, I went up and David Nolan, the critic for the Irish Times, was out that night. And Siobhan McKenna came out. Oh, God, I said, what's this? Anyway, it was just a good show of respect. And afterwards, it went very well. I think there were about 50 people at it.
You know? Yeah.
And then we went into the bar. David Nolan was in there. And you're never supposed to have a drink with the critics after the show.
Yeah.
But seeing as there were nobody else there except Siobhan and the critics, David, he said that. I mean, right? And then David, Johnny turns around and he says, you're going to get one fucking great review tomorrow morning. So he says, and David, safe home. You know, I wish he did, yeah. But it was great. Yeah. Now for a beginner, you know. I think he's going to have a good future in the business, you know, if he keeps focused, right? Yeah, it'd be no problem at all, right, you know. Yeah. He's a great drummer too, I hear, yeah. Yeah, he was in Oslo for a while there, you know. He didn't stay. I wonder what went wrong. You know, he's back after 24 hours. Yeah, you'd wonder about these things sometimes, wouldn't you? Yeah. Yeah, he's a nice lad. He is. He's a very nice lad, yeah. I'm just saying that to myself, right? You see, you're the only one who's listening. Yeah. Yeah, big grand lad. We'll be right back.
Somebody had said to Peter O'Toole, what do you miss about the olden days? And he says, I miss smoke-filled rooms, he said.
I don't know. I mean, I don't remember him smoking. I mean, mind you, this is going back to 1966, 67.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. But, no, I stopped smoking. You know, I don't miss the smoke with filled rooms anymore. No.
I'm 3 years now. I'm glad I quit.
It is. I went through cold turkey. What did you do?
I got a chest infection and I just stopped.
Oh, yeah.
That was it. But, like yourself, I think when you're raising kids and you're working in the entertainment industry or whatever you want to call it, you'll always have those, maybe a decade, that's very difficult, you know?
Yeah.
And I struggled with me drinking and all that as well, but I was in my 30s. That's been pretty young, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, you might have struggled with it, but I mean, it wasn't so much a struggle with it. You had a little battle with it.
It wasn't even a battle. Do you know what it was? It was just, these habits can form. I got used to, it was more like drinking would help you, forget, let's say financial troubles or stuff like that. You know, like I had a bit of that in my 30s.
We always do that, yeah.
Well, your generation had the recession in the 80s and then we had our recession then in the 90s, you know, and it was a tough old time, you know.
Yeah. Now, I remember my daughter, right, and she, for biting her nails a good few years ago, biting her nails.
Yeah. Right?
And I said, Eva, you got to stop biting your nails, right? Okay, Dad, I will, when you stop smoking. Oh, okay. So anyway, I stopped smoking and she stopped biting her nails. Then, a couple of years later, he says, Dad, what? I got bad news for you. Don't tell me. No, I didn't know what the other bad news was, you know. When a daughter tells a father, hang on a minute. Right?
Yeah.
I said, what is it? And she says, I've started smoking. God, I said, I was nearly wishing she said the other, you know. And I said, oh, no, you haven't. Anyway, yeah. So anyway, she went through and she was smoking. And then we used to have a smoke together outside. We'd meet sort of one Monday a month, right?
Yeah.
In Neary's, Channel Street.
Yeah.
And she'd come in and meet me just after lunchtime and we'd have a pint. And we'd go outside Neary's and have a smoke. But now she stopped since little baby arrived and all that, you know. And I haven't smoked since I had the carotid artery cleared out.
Yeah.
Which was dangerous, right? Yeah. That was heading for a major stroke.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so...
But you're 74 now and you're in good health.
74, no, I'm not. No. You want to see me legs, for God's sake, you know?
Yeah, but you're very slim.
Very slim.
You have a bit of colour in your cheeks. So
the fella says you can't fatten a thoroughbred, but you can starve him. You know? Yeah, I mean, but that's, you know, I'm 74, and like I said earlier, when I'm talking about people I work with, I keep falling in love with, God rest them, you're at that stage where, oh my God, you're three quarters of a century.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Anyway.
Do you find looking back, I find I'm only 45 now, you've a good 30 years on me, but... Do you find sometimes when you're looking back on experiences, or it's almost like a dream where you feel like you're peeking into someone else's life to some degree? I find, even though you experienced the stuff firsthand, you know, would you be nostalgic, for example? By nature,
well,
you know?
You see, as an actor, you've gone through so many things, so many parts, so many people, and everything, right? I mean, if you were to get nostalgic, right, you wouldn't stop.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And I am. And like I said, and a great mate of mine that we haven't spoken about is Dennis Warlaman.
Right.
You know, when he came over, and we're great mates, and that he'd come over and we'd play charity football, and I could go over and stay with him, and we'd have that, and there were times I look back at that, right, and you say you'd like to still see him, you know,
yeah.
But he's gone on to do All Tricks and I've gone on to do Fair City and all that. Yeah, I'm still working. And what he loved about coming over was when he'd get into a taxi, he'd meet me outside an RTE and we'd go into town. And I'd be getting into the taxi, going, all right. And we'd be driving along, right? And the driver, great, you know. How are you, Dennis? How are you doing? So, not too bad. He said, I see you're in bad company with that Bartley fella, you know.
Yeah.
And this is, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said he just loved the familiarity of not the sort of, oh, are you so-and-so? And how are this and that? He just loved the bit of crack in the taxi going in.
Yeah.
And that was, that's it, you know. And because he became a friend. Right. Mind you, we haven't been in touch for years, but I mean, that's the way it goes, you know.
Yeah, that's kind of part for, it's a very transient industry that we work in, you know. You can have these intense relationships with people and then, you know, you mightn't hear from them ever again.
Absolutely, or,
you know,
yeah.
But when it's good, it's good, you know.
It was like Brenda and myself, and we were so very good friends, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I have to say that I was totally besotted years ago, right?
Yeah.
When she played my girlfriend in Talcaro. And she said to me, she says, Jim Bartley, I loved you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you went through. And maybe it was just as well that you didn't fall for each other because your friendship lasted an awful long time, you know?
Yeah.
No, I don't regret or feel, you know, nostalgic. You know, there are only things you feel that you would like to have happened, but, you know, they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, what has happened, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you and I are, we're sitting here talking, you know, having a pint and all that, which is great. I'm able to go down memory road, right?
Yeah.
But it's not so much nostalgia. It's just a look back, you know.
Yeah.
Of what was there. Like, I am... The nostalgia, when I did the one-man show about Dublin in the 50s, right?
Yeah.
And I remember, it's the end, it's the soliloquy of the show. And it goes back to Dublin in the 50s. And when I finished the show, I could see people in the audience and I could see the tears coming out.
Yeah.
With that, you know, with what I was saying. And I had Dublin in the Rare Royal Times playing in the background. Yeah. As I was saying it, you know?
Yeah.
So there...
And what's your take on Dublin now? I mean, it's changed so much.
It had to change. I don't go in there so much now. If I do go in... But now, my daughter, since she's family-bound and all that, she's got all that stuff to do, I don't miss it, really, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you change as you grow older anyway. And
you do.
And you get to like who your friends are at the moment. No, that you go, like are you saying, you know, the transition into different ages of experience and all that.
Yeah.
You know, and like I said, I'll just give you that little soliloquy just of Dublin, right?
Yeah.
You'll have to say, imagine the Rare Times playing in the background.
Sure.
It's from the soliloquy, right? And it's called About Dublin. It was Dublin and it was the 50s. And if it wasn't exactly the best of times, well, Jesus was far, far away from being the worst of times. Thousands of people not alone lived in inner Dublin then. They enjoyed living there. The hard times of the 30s and the 40s were on the way out. And at last, there was a few shillings stored. And not to Marbella or Miami did the neighbours go on the holliers, no. The Isle of Man and Blackpool were coming in reach of most of us, and there were faint rumours of strange, exotic places like Cork and Kerry coming to the ears of the chiselers. And those summer nights along those summer hill streets where now blind and shuttered homes look down on empty streets, empty pavements, where children used to play in the sun, fish and chips would scent the air, and Elwyn's sitting in the windows of tall tenements would give and receive the news while they're taking the sun. Television was to be observed here and there, but not everywhere. Instead, one moved homewards at an easy pace, not having an urgent appointment with Talcaro or the Late Late Show or Glenroe. Instead, one stood and talked, and there was an immense amount of talk to be had for the price of a pint. Ah, and every pub had its own guru. Now, not all of them had names. Some of them were known merely as your man or the queer fella. the Headcase, the Majestic himself, which usually referred to the owner of the gaff. And there was the one who entitled to the supreme title of supreme guru of all. That was when you referred to him with Jesus, where would you be without him? But now, there were public house sages with real names too. Paddy Kavanagh could be heard in MacDay's of Harry Street, discoursing on such esoteric subjects as the beauty of Ginger Rogers, professional boxing, and the dire state of Gaelic football in Ulster. Miles Nagopoline could be heard in Nearies or the Scotch House, and Brendan Bean could be heard everywhere. In that leisurely decade, a conglomerate was a tin of glue. A merger was drums and shells agreeing to share Talca Park. A pill was a pain in the neck. An ongoing situation, a continuing pain in the neck. And relevant scenarios at this point in time hadn't even reached a point in time. And so we sat and drank our inexpensive pints in affable, uncrowded pubs, where the barman had ample time to discuss the weekend match with you. Himself was always good for a few points on the slate. And the point came slowly up from the cellar. And if any prophet, false prophet, had entered our little nirvanas and told us that most of us would see the day when a pound note wouldn't purchase a pint, we would have had him arrested, committed as a lunatic. But now, marooned in the hashtag Instagram, Facebook, Twitter of the 21st century, bewildered survivors wonder as they look around, has it all vanished? Or is it still just lying out there somewhere? And have we just lost track of it?
That's fabulous. Well, I don't think that's wonderful. Did you write that?
No, I adapted it from a book called Tom Corkery's Dublin. That was the end of the one man.
That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's fantastic.
Lovely.
And it's up to date as well. I mean,
yeah, you know, I had to put that
yeah,
in.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this was written in the 70s.
Yeah.
And so I had to put in. Now he says marooned in the jet set 60s, bewildered survivors of the 50s wonder, you know.
Yeah.
So I had to bring it up to date, you know.
Well, I don't think we can find a better way to end this podcast than on that.
I think that was it. Thank you very much, Johnny.
And thank you, Jim, for giving me your time. And look, with 7 decades behind you, we'll have to do it again because, you know, I'm sure you've plenty
more. Yeah, well,
you've
got the 8 decades. No, hang on.
Yeah, we've got the 8 decades to go, you know. So, I mean, you're still moving forward. So that's the main thing.
Still moving forward.
But
still getting there.
That's been wonderful. Just been wonderful.
Great.
And that's my first podcast and it couldn't have gone any better. And I'm just really grateful for your time.
It's good crack.
You know, good crack.
Good crack,
we'll do it again.
Oh, we'll do it again. No problem.
We sure
right?
will.
We'll do it again.
Don't know where.
But I know we'll do it again. Some sunny day.
We'll have another pint though, will we?
Ah, yeah. We go down the road now. Right.
Let's do it. Let's
good luck,
do it.
Johnny.
All right. We'll switch her off here.
Yeah.
Cheers to you. Oh, yeah.
You have to finish on that.
That's not.